Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show. This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we'll get to my takeaways from Week 8 of the NFL season. Plus, the trade deadline is tomorrow in the NFL. We just had a big trade go down. What else could be expected when it comes to the trade deadline here over the next 24 hours, including Deshaun Watson? Get to all that coming up here in this hour and more. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. Find the podcast online as well, charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page or through our free app. Head to the App Store, download the app by searching ESPN Charleston. You can always join the conversation as well, 843-721-9500. You can text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. Or online, charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. Hopefully you had a great Halloween. I'm at this point, right? I'm too old to go trick-or-treating. Of course, I've been too old for decades to go trick-or-treating. And I don't have any kids that I don't have to go out and trick-or-treat with. Or, you know, I don't have any, like, nephews. I don't have family in the area like that I, you know, I'll go out and trick-or-treat with. And especially yesterday, because it's a Sunday, and I'm just sitting at home watching football. So it was a different Halloween. And as I said last week, and maybe this is just me, even just driving around, I went out yesterday to grab something to eat. At least over by where I lived, like, I didn't see any trick-or-treaters. I didn't see anything going on. It was a quiet Halloween. I sat inside and watched miserable football instead with the Vikings breaking my heart. What were things like over in your neck of the woods last night, Joe?
Oh, we had a pretty good crowd. I think we gave out about three quarters of the candy we had.
Nice.
And that's what I do. I sit outside and hand out the candy.
Yeah.
One, you get to see, you know, everybody, you know, walk around to see all the different costumes and such.
Yeah.
And also, I know a little too much about Halloween pranks, and so that way I'm out there to keep an eye on things.
That's right. Yep. Stay away. What were some of the best costumes that stood out to you that you saw come by the house last night?
One was a whoopee cushion.
A whoopee cushion?
Yeah.
That's good. I don't think I've ever seen that.
One that had a shirt on there, I guess I had to explain it. It was a loaded diaper.
A loaded diaper?
Yeah.
How old were these trick-or-treaters? Was this like a little on the older side?
Yeah, well, yeah, probably middle school age.
Okay.
Those two were.
Yeah,
now, as far as the younger ones, had a couple of Boba Fetts.
Uh-huh.
Let's see. What are some other ones?
I saw, you know, you always see these photos online of people, like the one that was going viral yesterday was of these parents that dressed up their kids like Tupac and Biggie, you know, the rappers from the 90s. Your kid, and in this case, these were like really young kids. You know, like they don't know who that is. Don't dress up. Don't try to live Halloween through your kids. They want to be dressed up in like Paw Patrol. Put them in those costumes instead of whatever you think would be funny. Let your kid be whatever they want to be. Ask them, what do you want to dress up as this year?
And I did see one kid as Clark Kent.
Ah.
And the way he had his was that the shirt was opening up to expose the Superman outfit.
I like,
you know,
that.
Like, so that was actually a good idea.
Yeah, that's good. Did he have like the
yeah,
like
he had the specs.
Curl? Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, but what about the curl?
Did he have no, he didn't have the curl.
Maybe
his hair wouldn't allow him to do that. So.
Yeah, that's got to be tricky. All right. I like that one. That's pretty good. Trade deadline's tomorrow in the NFL. On the text line, somebody asked about the Carolina Panthers. Could they trade for Marcus Mariota or even Gardner Minshew? Backup quarterbacks with other teams. Mariota's the backup at the Raiders. Minshew's the backup with the Eagles. There was actually talk going into yesterday's game for the Eagles that if Jalen Hurts didn't play well, that maybe you would see some sort of move, you know, making Gardner Minshew the new starting quarterback. Jalen Hurts played well enough. He didn't do a whole lot yesterday. The running game did, and they blew out the Lions, so I think he's safe for now. But, yeah, Mariota's another one. Mariota's one of the best backups in the league. So if you're the Panthers, I just don't think the Panthers make a move. Now, Darnold got injured. They finally won yesterday, the Panthers did. Darnold gets injured, but it's a concussion. So you imagine maybe he won't be available this week, but it's not a long-term thing. And I think Carolina, at this point, they may not be all in on Sam moving forward, but I think just for this year. Now, I know David Tepper's really aggressive. We've heard the Panthers linked to Deshaun Watson. That has since disintegrated. I just don't see Carolina making a move like that over the next 24 hours, and I also don't know how big of an upgrade that would be anyways in the next 24 hours, especially Gardner Minshew. Now, if you were to tell me that Sam Darnold suffered a season-ending injury yesterday, then I would say absolutely, because P.J. Walker, I don't think you can go with him being the starter the rest of the year. You'd have to get somebody else. But for Darnold, if you're asking because of the injury, that's not a concern. If you're asking because of performance, Mariota is probably better. Minshew, probably better, maybe. But again, I just don't know how big of upgrades they are. Do they really make a difference this year? And once you bring in Marcus Mariota, it's like, okay, now we can go win some playoff games. We couldn't with Sam, but we can with Marcus Mariota. So I just don't see the Panthers making a move like that because I don't think that's big enough. If Deshaun didn't have his issues going on and you could rely on him playing this Sunday and the rest of the year, you make a big-time move like that because that could be the difference in you trying to win some playoff games this year. But go get a Mariota. And look, if it only takes a couple of draft picks, then sure, why not? Take a chance on it. I just don't think the Panthers make a move. I don't think they move on for Sam Darnold at this point for somebody like that. I think it'd have to be a real big step up like a Deshaun Watson. Or who, you know, quarterbacks don't become good quarterbacks don't become available at the trade deadline. So I couldn't even come up with another example for you of somebody who may be on the trading block. But Mariota and Minshew would probably be the best available for teams that are quarterback needy. I just don't know if the Panthers, maybe I'm wrong. I don't think they pulled the trigger on that type of move here in the next 24 hours. Von Miller traded. That's the first big trade of the deadline, and we usually don't get a ton of trades here at the deadline. We'll see if anything else happens in the next 24 hours. The Titans will have to try to find somebody. And some other teams, we always talk about aggressiveness wins in sports. The Rams are being aggressive right now. So now if you're the Packers and you see that, do you go out and make a move? If you're the Cowboys, do you try to improve your defense in the next 24 hours and pull off a trade? These other teams that Super Bowl windows can be really small, especially if you're the Packers and you think Aaron Rodgers and maybe even Davante Adams leave after this season. So you got to take advantage of these windows while they're cracked open. And the NFC is wide open right now. You have these five teams that all have, you know, one loss at the top of the conference. And the Rams just got better. So if you're the Cowboys, if you're the Packers, maybe the Buccaneers, they could improve their defense a little bit. You look at these other teams and you think like, oh, we kind of have to keep pace. The Rams just got better. What are we doing to get better? That kind of idea. But the trade deadline usually is not that busy in the NFL. It's not like baseball. Right? Baseball is the busiest trade deadline typically. The NFL, not so much. Even in the offseason, there aren't a ton of trades typically in the NFL. More so the last few years, but historically, it's never been a big blockbuster trade type of the league. We'll see what other moves, if any, big-time moves we get in the next 24 hours. The Titans really need a running back. We'll see if they pull off something. But Von Miller on his way to the Rams. And for the Broncos, you know, that's one of those get something for him before it's too late. But the Broncos, they started 3-0. They just won yesterday. They're a defensive-minded team, and they move on from Von Miller for two draft picks for this year's draft. So it kind of shows a little bit of, like, the thought process there of a little bit of a reload this year, rebuild, after a team that started 3-0. And we're talking playoffs. Well, here they are trading away some assets for some draft picks for the future with the look ahead. Realizing themselves, I'm sure, just like we all figured, you know, that this team, 3-0 record was a little bit hollow. This team isn't one of the better teams in the AFC. But interesting to see after a 3-0 start, you know, giving up Von Miller for two draft picks here at the deadline. Jay Glazer was on Fox Sports Radio over the weekend, and I think he used this same report yesterday on the Fox pregame show. But Glazer was talking about Deshaun Watson. Trade deadline's tomorrow. A lot of the focus has been on Deshaun Watson. I've been saying all along, I don't think he gets moved. I don't think there's a situation in which you could trade him right now with everything going on. But here was Jay Glazer on the latest and what he had to report on the Texans trying to move Deshaun Watson this time of year.
Houston has played this all wrong. Completely wrong. They have made it so hard on anybody who wants to trade for Deshaun Watson. All the way back to training camp when they would not return anyone's phone calls or text. I mean, they were so hard. And I've had teams tell me straight out, we would go and do this, but we can't do business with them. Like, we don't understand why they won't just respond to a text, respond to a phone call. That's just how, you know, GMs work together. And then as this has gone on also, I mean, you want as much information as you can. If you're signing or trading for somebody who's going through such a huge legal issues, you want as much information as you can, and they can't get information out of Texans or even, like, if you want to trade for a guy that's, you know, going through this, I know certain teams are even saying, well, we'd like to talk to Deshaun, and the Texans are saying no. So it's like, man, they just played it wrong. It's you know, and again, and I reported this on Fox NFL Sunday a few weeks ago, they had already turned down. They were offered three number ones and three number threes for Deshaun, and they turned it down. So, yeah, they played this wrong.
Glazer on Deshaun. We all know friends who have held on to things a little too long, right? It happens a lot, like with stocks, most notably. You hold on to something a little too long, or maybe like a car, right? You don't want to give up a car. Someone's offering you money for the car or something, and then you, I'm not ready to give it up yet. Or the lease is up, and your wife said, get rid of that car. Go get a different car. And you said, I still want it. And then you drive it a little bit longer, and then, you know, the thing craps out on you. It starts giving you all sorts of trouble, and you thought, like, man, I did keep this car too long. Or this house. Somebody knocks on your door and says, hey, we're willing to give you this much for this house. Oh, no, we're not looking to move. We like this house. Then a year later, you know, things start falling apart, and you think, like, oh, we should have gotten out of this house when we had the chance. That's the Texans with Deshaun Watson just holding on too long, asking for too much. And if I'm the Texans, sure, maybe you take a little bit hit in the value market. I would try to unload him before things potentially get worse. Right? Almost like pull a fast one on another team. Because who knows? Best case scenario, yes, nothing. He's cleared of any wrongdoing this offseason. He returns to action. He's good to go. But he still didn't want to be in Houston. Right? He still didn't want to play for you even before these legal issues. Worst case scenario, he's found guilty of something this offseason. And who knows? The very worst case scenario is Deshaun never plays again in the NFL. If it gets that bad, I have no idea what's going to happen come February. So why not get something for him instead of you hold on to him? Things get even worse this offseason. The NFL says, yeah, okay, well, Deshaun, he's not going to play, or at least not for another year or two. And you still have him. It's like, okay, well, now we're just stuck with this guy. And then once he gets out of his year suspension, how does it look, you know, bringing him back to your team? And he already wasn't happy with you to begin with. My point being, if I'm the Texans, like, you know, cut bait at this point. Try to unload him for something. Get something for him before things potentially get worse. We all know friends who do that, too. When they know what's coming down the road, so they try to unload it on you. They try to foist you with something that's not going to work out for you. They want to get it off of their hands before things go bad. If I'm the Texans, that's what I'm doing. Get something for him. Okay, he's your problem. Because I don't think if he's traded, just hypothetically speaking, and I don't think it's going to happen, if he gets traded in the next 24 hours, I think the NFL would step in before he tries to play for a new team. I just don't see a way where Deshaun gets on the field at any point this season, one way or another. So if I'm the Texans, I'm trying to make him go be someone else's problem. Give us something for him. Okay, now you have to worry about him and clean my hands from this. But I don't think he gets moved. Von Miller, the big name. We'll see if any other trades happen in the next 24 hours. We'll see if the Titans do anything to try to replace Derrick Henry. But the trade deadline coming up tomorrow in the NFL. When we come back, I'll give you my breakdown, my thoughts, the reactions from all the games in Week 8 of the NFL season. And we'll do it next. It's the Mora Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mora Midday Show.
Coming up, we break down all the games in Week 8 of the NFL season. Here on the Mora Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Week 8 wraps up tonight, Monday Night Football. Giants, Chiefs, 8:15 on ESPN, and then the World Series resumes tomorrow night. Get a break from baseball. Braves will try to finish it off in Houston tomorrow. And tonight, Monday Night Football, Giants, Chiefs. Every week on the show, we come in on Friday and we preview the weekend of games. And then we see what happens over the weekend. We come back in on Monday, and I give you my thoughts, my takeaways from all the games in the NFL weekend, and the numbers that stand out the most. And it's time to do that now. Let's run through recapping all the games from Week 8 in the NFL season and what we saw over the past weekend in the NFL.
Green Bay Packers. at Arizona Cardinals.
This started off the weekend on Thursday night with a wild game between these two. I came in Friday and said that most people following the NFL went into Thursday's game probably thinking Kyler Murray was the front runner for the MVP. Well, we should have left that game thinking that Aaron Rodgers is now the front runner, because the Packers are a 500 team masquerading as one of the best in the NFC strictly because of Rodgers. He's the only quarterback to win on a short week when traveling multiple time zones. He's done it twice. No other quarterback has done it once. He's 7-0 without Devontae Adams since Devontae came into the league, and he's won 10 straight primetime games. We'll get to the Vikings-Cowboys coming up, but you see the difference. Kirk Cousins shrivels up in primetime. Aaron Rodgers gets even better in those big spots. And they give the Cardinals their first loss of the season. No more undefeated teams. But as I watched that game on Sunday, and now we get Von Miller going to the Rams, and even though the Buccaneers lost yesterday, I still come away from that game on Thursday watching those two, not thinking they're the two best teams in the NFC. I think it's still Rams, Bucs, Gap, and then everybody else who's at the top of that conference. But the NFC with the five best records in the NFL right now, it's a very top-heavy conference these days.
Pittsburgh Steelers at Cleveland Browns.
Bad loss for the Browns. Favored by 5 at home, you lose to the Steelers and Ben Roethlisberger, who played pretty well yesterday but otherwise hasn't been able to do much this year. I mean, the Steelers still only scored 15 points. And if you're Baker Mayfield coming back from an injury, they managed only 10. Now, he didn't get a ton of help from the pieces around him. Jarvis Landry with a couple of big drops. They had a couple of big penalties. How about the fact that OBJ had one catch yesterday? And there's been rumors about trying to move him here at the trade deadline. What has happened to Odell Beckham Jr.? He made that one great catch on Sunday Night Football. Talking about him as one of the greatest receivers of all time, he has been lousy the last couple of years, ever since that boat picture. But for the Browns, this is a bad loss. Now they're 500. The Steelers are ahead of them. And at the start of the season, everyone was talking up the Browns as this great team. They've lost 3 of 4. And everyone is writing off the Steelers, you know, writing them off to be dead. And here they are winning on the road in Cleveland. This was an ugly game. This was a classic AFC North game, defensive battle, run the football, not score a lot of points. What was wild in this was that the Steelers pulled off a fake field goal try from the 10-yard line, which I did not like. And Chris Boswell had to try to throw the football. And oftentimes, when you run a fake like this, I would tell my kicker, first read, if it's not there, just get rid of it. But he was keeping the play alive. He was drifting to the right. He was looking, you know, no, first option's not there. Okay, second guy, third. He was going through his progressions. Props to him for trying to make something happen. But then he took quite the shot towards the helmet, had a concussion, had to leave the game. So the Steelers had to play the rest of their game without their kicker. So they couldn't kick a field goal inside the 5 to take the lead. They had to go for it on fourth down. And when they scored, they couldn't kick the extra point. They had to go for 2. I did not like that call from Mike Tomlin. It made things more difficult the rest of the game. But my point in all this is that even with the Steelers kind of playing with a hand tied behind their back, they still won in Cleveland. Right? They had to go for it on fourth downs instead of kicking field goals. They had to go for it on 2-point conversion. They still beat the Browns in Cleveland. That's a bad loss for the Browns. And I said on Friday, previewing the games on the show, this is the type of game that Tomlin does win. 5-point underdog on the road against Cleveland, a team that they usually dominate historically. This is when Tomlin gets his guys, you know, to rally and get worked up and go win a game like this when people don't expect them to. And that's exactly what happened yesterday. Tomlin and the Steelers are really good as underdogs, and that was a good win for them yesterday in Cleveland.
Miami Dolphins at Buffalo Bills.
So the Bills sleptwalk, you know, they sleptwalk through the first half of this game. It was 3-3 in the third quarter, and they woke up to put the game away late. For Miami, the big story here really is just the Tua watch to see if the Dolphins make anything happen in the next 24 hours. Tua wasn't great. He wasn't terrible, but he ended up with just 200 yards, an interception, completed almost only half of his passes. He was on the road against the number 2 defense in the league, so this was a big test for Tua. Again, didn't play great, wasn't awful. We'll see if the Dolphins make a move in the next 24 hours, but Miami's now 1-7, and it's really about figuring out their quarterback for the future. For the Bills, they were favored by 2 touchdowns. They eventually got there and won this game. They didn't play a great 60 minutes of football. Their defense was good. They did enough on offense. And Josh Allen, it's still been all about him. He was a leading rusher yesterday. He handed it off only 15 times, threw it 42 times. They're asking a lot from Josh Allen. He needs more help on offense for the Bills, who are now 5-2.
Carolina Panthers at Atlanta Falcons.
So the Panthers finally snapped their losing streak. They get back to 500. The Falcons fall under 500. Sam Darnold, before the concussion, didn't do a lot, but he played better because, most importantly, he took care of the football. And the Panthers had their most rushing yards in a game in over 2 years, even without Christian McCaffrey. So they got back to, and they only scored 19 points, and it was a Falcons team. You know, it's not that impressive of a win for Carolina, but it was a divisional win on the road, and they got back to the recipe early in the season that was winning them games. Run the football, make it easy on Sam, play good defense, play complimentary football. That's what they did yesterday. The Falcons jumped out to an early lead, and then Atlanta did not score. They had one field goal the rest of the way. After they scored, the Falcons got their touchdown a minute into the second quarter. And then they did not score again until 16 seconds left in the game. So the Panthers defense pitched a shutout for just about three quarters, the last three quarters, which was impressive. Matt Ryan did not play well, had a couple of interceptions, averaged only 5 yards per attempt. And this was a bad matchup going in for the Falcons. We knew that because the Panthers are really good against the tight end. And then Calvin Ridley announced yesterday that he's stepping away from the team. That's the biggest concern for the Falcons. They lose this game, they fall under 500, but the big concern is Calvin Ridley, who has to take some time away, as he said, to focus on his mental health, which is very important. And so that's, of course, priority number one, make sure Ridley's okay. And then from a football perspective, because that's what we do around here, big loss for the Falcons to lose Calvin Ridley. Now, you can't anticipate something like this happening, but I did say at the start of the season for the Falcons, my concern for them is the lack of depth at the wide receiver position. And my concern was because Ridley was coming off of foot surgery. And I thought, what happens if he has some lingering issues with his foot? Behind Ridley, you have nothing. All you have is Kyle Pitts. And as we saw yesterday, the Panthers did a great job on Pitts. Two catches on six targets, he had 13 yards. He was the only guy you had to worry about. Tajay Sharp was the leading receiver. Then Cordarrelle Patterson. Then Mike Davis. If Calvin Ridley's going to be away for an extended period of time, this Falcons offense could look like it did yesterday, scoring only 13 points. Matt Ryan was bad. He's got nobody to throw to. The running game isn't good. Cordarrelle Patterson is your quasi-running back. Without Calvin Ridley, the only weapon they really have is Kyle Pitts, but now you can double him. Makes it a lot harder. Matt Ryan tried to force him the football at the end of the game through a costly interception. The Falcons could really struggle now without Calvin Ridley as the Panthers break their four-game losing streak in much-needed fashion yesterday. Now we'll see if Sam Darnold can get back on the field this Sunday.
Cincinnati Bengals at New York Jets.
This was pathetic. Now, I do have to admit, I said it off the top, I took the Bengals in my survivor pool. And I'll be honest, I usually struggle in survivor pools. So I was very excited that I made it this far to week eight. And I still had the Tampa Bay Buccaneers left, and I was set up pretty good. And so I said, let me take the Bengals. And I was texting with my brother before the games yesterday, and I was saying, you know, I don't feel great about it. Bengals on the road, I don't really trust this team still. But the Jets are using a backup quarterback. They're a one-win team. The Bengals are favored by 11. You got to win this game. And yet, of course, they didn't. The Jets scored 17 points in the fourth quarter to win. Joe Burrow had a big interception. And the Jets were able to pressure the quarterback. This is why I've been teetering. I've been flip-flopping on the Bengals all year. This is why it's hard to trust them. Because they look good 1 week. They're 5-2. We're talking about the Bengals as one of the best teams in the AFC. But then they lose to the Jets and Mike White. It wasn't even Zach Wilson. That is a bad loss for Cincinnati. And now you have the Bengals and the Titans, two of the top teams record-wise in the AFC, that have lost to the Jets. So the Jets, they chop down these Giants. They win these games that they have no business winning. And yesterday, Mike White was fantastic. Had over 400 yards. First Jet quarterback to do that since Vinny Testaverde 21 years ago. He had one of the best debuts in NFL history. He completed over 80% of his passes. Had over 400 yards. Had three touchdowns. I think he may be the only guy to do that in his first ever start. He was excellent. And the Jets got a big win. I don't care how long Zach Wilson is out for. I'm rolling with Mike White until he starts to struggle. But the way he played yesterday, he earned a couple of more starts for this Jets team. He's better than Zach Wilson right now. And the Jets beat the Bengals. Embarrassing for the Bengals. Now, I will say this. The very end of the game, the Bengals shouldn't have even been in this position, but there was a terrible penalty call that cost the Bengals their last chance. They would have gotten the football back with about a minute 40 to go, two timeouts, needing just a field goal, and we could really see what Joe Burrow's made of. But the officials threw a terrible penalty on a third down stop by the Bengals that gave the Jets a first down and helped them win the game. Now, I'm not a blame the refs guy. The Bengals shouldn't have even been trailing in the final 2 minutes to be in that situation. But they did have their last opportunity at a comeback taken away by a lousy call. And here I am with the Bengals as my survivor pick. So I am a little biased and emotional in all of this. But I was very upset. Blown call yesterday cost the Bengals. But they should have never been in that position to begin with. That is an embarrassing loss for a team that's trying to climb the ladder in the AFC.
Tennessee Titans at Indianapolis Colts.
Titans win the game. So just a quick note on the game. Carson Wentz threw an interception in the fourth quarter that gave the Titans the lead. Then he goes down and gets the tying touchdown to go to overtime. And then he throws an interception in overtime that gives the Titans the winning field goal. You just can't make plays like – you can't do that at the end of the game. With the game on the line, you can't make these terrible plays. And Wentz was doing so well when it comes to turnovers this year prior to yesterday. And now the Colts, with that loss, they're three games behind the Titans. And it seemed like the Titans at 6-2 with three straight wins just beat the Colts. They beat three straight playoff teams from last year. Looked like, oh, yeah, the Colts have this division locked up. However, we get the news after the game, and now confirmed by Adam Schefter about 15 minutes ago, that Derrick Henry is going to get surgery tomorrow. He is most likely out for the rest of the regular season. The Titans are holding out hope that he can return for the playoffs, but that's a huge loss. His backup is already on IR. So the Titans are down their top two running backs. It leaves them with Jeremy McNichols, who's not a full-time running back. They're working out Adrian Peterson today. They need to bring somebody in, anybody in, because they don't have a running back right now, and this is a team that runs through, pun intended, that running back position. Derrick Henry has 80% of their rushing yards. He has 40% of their offense. They need him badly. Ryan Tannehill has something like 7 touchdowns to 5 interceptions this year. He's not the guy that's going to put the team on your back. So a big-time loss for the Titans. They get the big win. They're 6-2. But now without Derrick Henry for the rest of the regular season, if Henry can't return, that spells big trouble for the Titans moving forward.
San Francisco 49ers at Chicago Bears.
The 49ers get the win. They put it away with 18 points in the fourth quarter. They get a much-needed victory. But my main takeaway from this game was Justin Fields. It was the best game of Fields' young career. And it was also the first time he played without his head coach, Matt Nagy. So just like I was talking about Bowling Green last hour, this does not reflect well on Matt Nagy, who is the offensive coach there. That the one time he's not there as the head coach, Justin Fields goes off. Now, in a prior job, I used to have a position where I would hire somebody to be like my assistant. I used to have an assistant. They worked under me. It was nice. And I remember the last time I hired an assistant, he was a good worker, but very timid. And I kind of had to tell him what to do, right? He wouldn't go out of his way to do things. I had to instruct him. Really good kid, good worker. I had no problems with him. The only thing was very timid. He was very quiet. And then I left for another job, and I heard afterwards that once I left, he really opened up. He had to fill my position until they found the replacement. And people around the office said after I left, right, he was like a whole new person. He was outgoing. He was joking. My point being, I think he was, I guess, intimidated because I was his quote-unquote boss. And once I left, he wasn't like scared or intimidated anymore. He could become himself. And I say all this because for Justin Fields, maybe it was the same way yesterday. Without Matt Nagy, he went out there and just balled and played well. And most notably, he ran it 10 times for over 100 yards. With Matt Nagy, they did not call. They called two quarterback run plays in 2 weeks. He ran it 10 times yesterday for over 100 yards. He was at his best because he was running. He was using all of his tools. For some reason, Matt Nagy wouldn't allow him to do so. So it's a bad look on the head coach of the Bears that when he's gone, Justin Fields plays his best game, and he does it because he's using his legs as he should. Not only does it give you another weapon, but for a young quarterback still learning how to read a defense and throw the football, it gives you that safety valve. That's pulling the parachute. Your first read isn't open? Okay, just take off and run. Make something happen with your legs. Fields did that yesterday. The Bears still lost, but that was the best outing for Fields by far this year. And for the first time, you come in on a Monday as a Bears fan feeling optimistic about your young quarterback moving forward.
Philadelphia Eagles at Detroit Lions.
I'm sorry, Lions. I continue to jinx you. I have picked the Lions to get their first win twice this year, and they were their two blowout losses. They have been competitive in every game except when I pick them to win. So it's been the curse. I'll remember that when they play the Vikings twice this year, or one more time. They already played them. Next time they play the Vikings, I'll remember that. But I thought they beat the Bengals. They got blown out at home. I thought they beat the Eagles. They got blown out at home. All the other games, they've been competitive. They almost beat the Vikings. They almost beat the Rams. But the two times I pick them, they get blown out. That was an embarrassing performance yesterday to lose at home 44-6 against Philadelphia. And Dan Campbell, their head coach, afterwards called his team a sea of trash. That's what he described the Lions as. On the Eagles' side of things, Jalen Hurts only threw the football 14 times. The Eagles got back to their running ways. Nick Sirianni, for whatever reason, has refused to hand off the football this year, even though the Eagles, when they do run it, are highly successful when Jalen Hurts is the quarterback. Yesterday, they ran it 46 times for 236 yards, 4 touchdowns. They were just the more physical team, ran it down the throats of the Lions. That was just an easy win. Line it up, run it right down their throats, and get out of here with a 40-point victory. They didn't have to do much offensively. They were the far superior team. Embarrassing loss for now the 0-8 Detroit Lions.
Los Angeles Rams at Houston Texans.
Yeah, not much to say here. It looks much better in the box score because the Texans scored 22 points in the fourth quarter when the teams pulled their starters, but the Rams were up 38-0 in this game. They did exactly what they should. They went on the road, blew out a bad team. The Rams are 7-1. The Texans are 1-7. You would figure this would be a blowout. And then on top of it, they add Von Miller today. So an impressive win for the Rams, who struggled with the Lions the week prior. This time, put the game away. Robert Woods played well for once. And the Rams get a big-time win in Houston, just as they should. Not much to take away from this game. That's exactly what should have happened.
New England Patriots at Los Angeles Chargers.
How about the Patriots getting a big road win? 3-0 on the road. They get back to .500. The Chargers come off a bye for this game, and they struggled offensively. They end up with the 24 points, but Justin Herbert with another bad performance, and most notably against the Patriots. Last year, the Patriots beat the Chargers in L.A. something like 45-0, and Herbert had the worst game of his career. So now he faces Belichick for the second time, has 2 weeks to prepare, and he goes out there yesterday, completes less than half his passes, has two more interceptions, a QBR of 16, struggled again. Now, Belichick is really good against young quarterbacks, so maybe that's the reason why. But if Justin Herbert, maybe more so, it's just a reminder that he still has some work to be done and a little bit, a little ways to go as just a second-year quarterback. He threw a huge interception that cost the Chargers the game yesterday. Game on the line, he threw a pick that allowed the Patriots to go up double digits in the fourth quarter. So Herbert now 0-2 against Belichick, two bad performances. Hey, maybe it's just because it's Bill Belichick, or Justin Herbert still has some room to improve as a young quarterback.
Jacksonville Jaguars at Seattle Seahawks.
So I was way off. This was a terrible performance. I continue to count on the Jaguars. I have no idea why. Coming off a bye week against Geno Smith, I thought, yeah, the Jags, they'll hang in there. They were down 31-0, 24-0. They get a touchdown, don't go for two for whatever reason, kick an onside kick, and the Seahawks return the onside kick for a touchdown to go up 31-7. That just summed up the game for the Jaguars. Coming off a bye week, 2 weeks to prepare, going up against Geno Smith, they lose by 24. Disappointing performance. James Robinson gets injured in the process. But on the flip side, Geno Smith played really well. 20 out of 24, two touchdowns. Seahawks now have their bye week, and then they're hopeful maybe Russell Wilson comes back for their next game as they try to stay afloat in the NFC West. And Pete Carroll has not lost four straight games now in over a decade. He avoided a fourth straight loss with that blowout yesterday of Jacksonville.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers at New Orleans Saints.
Bad loss for the Bucs. How? This has to be the first time in Brady's career that he loses to a third-string quarterback after Jameis Winston got hurt. And he threw a big pick six that sealed the game. You're expecting Brady to lead the Bucs on a winning drive in the end of the game instead of throwing the pick six. Brady had three more turnovers yesterday. I said it on the show Friday. The Saints are the kryptonite for Tom Brady for whatever reason. In the regular season, since joining Tampa Bay, Brady is 0-3 against the Saints. But in his 0-3 with eight turnovers in those three games. But in his other 21 games, he has just nine turnovers. Half of his turnovers with the Buccaneers have come in three games against the Saints. His worst loss with the Buccaneers was last year against the Saints. They lost by 35. I don't know what it is. He had three more turnovers yesterday. For some reason, the Saints have Brady apparently figured out. It's a bad matchup for him in Tampa Bay. They have lost all three games in the regular season against the Saints since bringing in Tom Brady. And that's their kryptonite. They just better hope that, you know, with this Jameis Winston injury, that the Saints fade away and they don't have to worry about them so much moving forward.
Washington football team at Denver Broncos.
Broncos get the win, a very ugly win. They're lucky Washington football team is so bad because the Broncos tried to hand that game away yesterday. But the big story here is that Denver gets that win. They're 4-4, and yet they wake up today and trade away Von Miller for draft picks. ESPN's FPI gives the Broncos a 29% chance of making the playoffs. And they're not fully punting on the season, but not a move that's made by a team you expect. You know, you expect them to be aggressive and try to make the playoffs instead. Remember, there's a seventh playoff team this year. Last year, the Browns were that seventh team. They were 5-3 at this point, made the playoffs, even won a playoff game. The Broncos are 4-4. Not a big difference. And yet, they're trading away Von Miller. I think it tells you what they think about their team right now, that they don't believe, you know, they're good enough to go compete this year. They're trading away Von Miller for assets instead, even with yesterday's victory.
Dallas Cowboys at Minnesota Vikings.
This was just embarrassing for the Vikings last night. As a Vikings fan, this was incredibly disappointing. Cooper Rush was the better quarterback. Now, first on the Cowboys, quickly, they made the smart move, obviously, because they got out of there with a win. But so often, we can be focused on the here and now. We're not patient enough, right? You don't worry about your your health for the big picture. You want to go have a cheeseburger now. You don't care if it's cutting time off your life down the road. We're always focused about the now. We're impatient. We don't look at the big picture. The smart people do. The best investors are the ones, they're looking at the big picture. They're patient. They're looking down the road, not right now. And my point being, for the Cowboys, they're looking down the road. They say, we can sacrifice 1 week if it makes sure to keep Dak Prescott healthy down the road. And then not only that, but they end up winning the game anyways with Cooper Rush, who outplayed Kirk Cousins last night. And I have defended Kirk Cousins as long as I can. But the guy is just not good enough in these big spots. Two stats to illustrate the point. Cooper Rush made his first career start last night. Kirk Cousins was making his 114th career start. Average depth of target, which means how far you're throwing the football. Cooper Rush, 10 yards. Kirk Cousins, 4.5 yards. Additionally, third downs when throwing the football. The Vikings converted on just 1 of 10. When they put the ball in Kirk Cousins' hands in the biggest plays, he went 1 for 10. Cooper Rush, when throwing the football on third down in his first career start, 4 of 9. That was the big difference in the game. And the last number I'll give you, after the opening drive when the Vikings got a touchdown, Kirk Cousins did not attempt another third down pass beyond the first down marker. Think about that. His next 9 pass attempts were all short of the sticks. What are you doing? You have been in the league long enough. You got to throw it downfield and try to convert on third down instead of all these silly little checkdowns because you're too skittish in the pocket. Enough of Kirk Cousins. He's 5-19 in primetime games. He has 0 fourth quarter touchdowns this year. Not enough to win in the big moments, and we saw that again last night. He got outplayed by a Central Michigan quarterback in his first career start. Embarrassing.
New York Giants at Kansas City Chiefs.
Monday Night Football tonight. I give you a pick for all national games. The Chiefs are favored by 10.5 tonight. That's too many points. The Chiefs are not covering spreads. They're still overvalued in Vegas. So I'm going to take the Giants, 10.5 point underdog, this evening on Monday Night Football. But for the Chiefs, this is the opportunity to get right. They're under 500. They're at home. Monday Night Football. Giants team coming to town. If you lose this one, we got big trouble in Kansas City. Even if you struggle in this one. They're favored by 10.5 for a reason. They should make a statement tonight. But too many points. I'm going to roll with the Giants to keep this close and competitive on Monday Night Football tonight. And there you go. The breakdown of Week 8 in the NFL season. Coming up, speaking of making picks, we had the worst beat of the year over the weekend, and it involved the Clemson Tigers, and we'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Did you miss our breakdown of Week 8 in the NFL? No problem. If you did, you can catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. I give you my picks every Friday. We did have a losing week this week, 3-5 in the picks I gave out on Friday. Tomorrow on the show, let you know where I was right and wrong with everything over the past week. And give you my picks, of course, on Friday of this week. So hope to have a winning weekend this time around. A rare losing week, 3-5. Make sure you get your picks in this week for our weekly Pick'em contest, which continues throughout the football season online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Make your picks by 5 p.m. Friday, and you could be the winner of a Fan Zone gift card. Get your picks in and try to pick some winners. Get yourself a gift card. Head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com to get your picks in by the end of the week. Clemson won Saturday against Florida State by the skin of their teeth, and did so in a bad beat fashion. Now, that was one of the picks I got wrong on Friday. It would have given us a 500 weekend instead of a losing weekend. The line, the number closed at 9.5, and Florida State was covering until that final play where they're trying to go at all the laterals, and Clemson intercepts it. They scoop it up in the end zone for the touchdown to end up winning by 10, 30-20, and cover the spread for the first time dating back to last year. Brutal, terrible beat. Florida State was good, covering. And on that type of play, which was essentially meaningless to the outcome, Clemson covers the spread. If you bet Florida State, even as a Clemson fan, right, what a bad beat. So it kept us from having a 500 weekend to a losing weekend. Let's get to our sound check, where we bring you some of the best sounds from the college football weekend, including that play. Here's how it sounded on Russian TV. Clemson, Florida State, for whatever reason, that was the big game they showed in Russia, and it ended in dramatic fashion with Clemson covering the spread for the first time this year. Here's how it sounded in Russia.
Quarters, построение такое тоже бывает. Три игрока линии защиты, один лайнбекер и семь игроков секондари. О, сейчас будет весело, это фамбл. Это фамбл, Трэвис мяч подбирает, бросает опять назад, это снова фамбл. И сейчас может подобрать Клемсон, тачдаун защиты! Друзья.
Картер, ноль, это всего лишь ноль на майке.
I don't know what they said, but I like it. I also don't know if they were if they're as into the gambling and the spread as we are around here to understand the significance of that play at the very end. You've been upset with Clemson's season so far. They're really ticked off in Russia with how disappointing Clemson has been. Apparently big Clemson fans over there. That's why it's on Russian TV. But the other big game Saturday, that was just a brutal bad beat. I was watching that game and I thought, oh my, are you kidding? I had Florida State at 9.5. And because of that play, Clemson covered, winning by 10. That was horrendous. That's why, kids, you never gamble on sports. But the big game Saturday was Michigan State and Michigan. And earlier, last hour, as we do every Monday, we got to our winners and losers. And for Michigan, Michigan State was my second biggest winner of the weekend. Harbaugh specifically, not Michigan, but Harbaugh was my biggest loser of the weekend. To lose a game like this, coughing up a double-digit lead in the second half and losing to your quote-unquote little brother once again. He's now 0-2 against Mel Tucker, the new coach who comes in and beats Harbaugh back-to-back years as an underdog both seasons. Incredibly disappointing for Michigan. Here's how it sounded on Michigan State radio, the game-sealing interception at the end that gave Michigan State the victory. Here's how they called it on their side of things.
37, Michigan 33, McNamara. Throws it right sideline. It is
picked. It's picked.
And it's
That's
picked.
The ball game, baby.
The Spartans have picked it off. They bat it up in the air and take it away.
Is that
Charles Brantley with the interception?
Nothing like the color guy stepping all over the play-by-play broadcaster. But obviously, as you can understand, a lot of excitement in that booth for Michigan State to come back and win a big-time game like that, and now to leap ahead, to move ahead of Michigan in this round robin going on in the Big Ten right now to try to decide who's going to be in that Big Ten championship.
And didn't I say keep an eye on Michigan State?
Did you? For that game or for the season?
For the season.
Oh, okay. Michigan State was one of the picks on Friday. That we did get correct. I said take Michigan State as a four-point dog. I actually did think Michigan was going to win outright, but that it would be fewer than 5 points in this sense. And Michigan State ended up winning in come-from-behind fashion. Disappointing loss for Harbaugh. And the last piece of audio I want to get to is from Bowling Green. We may not talk a lot of Bowling Green football around here. They were one of my winners from the weekend because they got their first conference win in 13 conference games. They were a 14-point underdog at Buffalo and ended up winning by 12, a 26-point swing. And their coach got ejected during the game. They won without him anyways, played really well. And I don't know who the interim coach was or the offensive coordinator, but he dialed up this play, which really, in the big picture, doesn't make much sense. It was a fake kneel down that Bowling Green then ran for a touchdown. But the thing is, if you're in the situation of kneeling the clock, you can just kneel it. They couldn't stop the clock. So I don't really get the point of this, right? The risk isn't worth the reward. I mean, it worked out in the end. But this was Bowling Green radio. They fake a kneel down and instead add on to the final score for their first conference win in 2 years.
Down a little bit again, try to take some time off. He does, and he runs forward. Now he's out in the clear. Matt's going to need to slide down in bounds. Actually, he's going to go all the way, and he's going to try and score a touchdown. And he does. Matt McDonald. They pulled the old rope-a-dope on him. Put it on the board.
The old rope-a-dope. I actually know that broadcasting crew. It seemed like they had already checked out, imagining that it was going to be a kneel-down game over, and there goes their quarterback. If you didn't see the play, it was one of those where you try to take more time off the clock, so, you know, you backpedal instead of just dropping to a knee. So he was backing up. The pass rush came in, and nobody was containing the quarterback because they thought he was just going to kneel down. So they all came pinching towards the quarterback, and he just simply did a big loop to the left around everybody, and he was off to the races down the left sideline. Faked the kneel down, ran it about 50 yards for a touchdown, which is a great play, but like I said, it's kind of meaningless. If you want to do that at the end of the second quarter, I get it. But at the end of the fourth, if you just took that knee, game's over anyway. So you don't need any more points. You don't need to get a first down. And you could potentially fumble. So I don't know if it was drawn up that way or if it was just the quarterback seeing an opening. But the fake kneel down for a touchdown that was meaningless but adds on to the final score, and Bowling Green gets their first conference win in 2 years.
And Bowling Green,
yeah,
where the green is in just the name because they don't wear it.
That's true. Which that's one of Bobby's pet peeves, right? Is that what it is? When they wear, schools wear like different colors than what their name is, if I remember correctly. Yeah, Bowling Green. They wear that like an ugly brown color. I mean, it keeps, you got the Cleveland Browns not too far away. So something about Ohio and the brown. But yeah, Bowling Green. And there's multiple Bowling Greens, but this is the one in Ohio. You don't talk much Bowling Green football, but they got a nice win on Saturday. And they did so with that weird play. Friend of the show, Dave Bartu, who we have on from time to time. May have him on soon because he's really good at predicting the playoff field. And through analytics, you know, he puts out his picks as well. His two top picks for this weekend was one win Navy, winning on Friday night, or covering the spread at least. And they did cover the spread and won outright. And the other pick he said was Bowling Green. As a 12-point underdog on the road, he said, take Bowling Green, and they ended up winning by 14. So props to Dave Bartu on Twitter at CFB Matrix, friend of the show, who is one of the more interesting guys to follow when it comes to college football. Very analytical, and his numbers told him this week, bet on one win Navy on Friday, and Bowling Green, I think, had two wins entering that game. Bet on Bowling Green on Saturday, and they both pulled upsets. They were underdogs of double digits. They both won the game outright. So props to him and his numbers for forecasting those two wins. And I was big of a Bowling Green fan Saturday as you could find, trying to cover that 14, and they ended up winning outright. When Clemson got that win Saturday against Florida State, it didn't look good for most of the game. You have three missed field goals. DJ had another brutal turnover that looked like it was actually going to cost you the game. Will Shipley was the star. He gets the winning touchdown for Clemson. They come back and beat Florida State to keep their winning streak alive, both against Florida State and also at home. And then Dabo afterwards said that that potentially was a top five win of his coaching career. Sounds crazy, doesn't it? But we'll get to that coming up next hour. Plus, the Atlanta Braves couldn't close it out last night, but still in the lead as the series heads to Houston. We'll talk more about the sports weekend in hour 3 coming up. It's the Mora Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.